Fashion, film, food, and music, some of our greatest loves in life. Welcome to Seems to Me with Sibylline Sariano and Steve Ricardo.
What's up, man?
Hi, hi. What a week we've had, huh?
Yeah.
And a weekend of incredible, incredible weather.
Oh, yeah. Which is unusual around here for April.
Well,
man. You know, mostly.
No,
unusual.
That was like 78 degrees. I was in the gallery all day with no fresh air, but, you know, otherwise, it's all good. So that was super fun last week, I gotta tell you. I really enjoyed talking about film, fashion, food, and music with you, Steve.
I enjoy talking about those things with you. I don't know much about fashion and food, except I like to eat.
And I think
you
we
know,
all
I,
like
I
to
failed
eat,
you
right?
today, and I wore a Vans t-shirt.
It's all good.
I don't have a
good.
Button-down shirt on.
At least
I apologize.
You, like, comboed it. You got a little fashion thing going there. He's got a cool necklace.
I didn't quite see I didn't see what you're seeing when I looked in the mirror, but okay.
Oh,
I'll take
on.
Your word for it.
So one of the things I was listening back on, I was like, you know what? We missed me talking about a little blurb I wanted to say about cologne and how important it is to smell good, men, gentlemen out there. It's really important to, like, have a scent, in my personal humble opinion. And, you know, don't underestimate the pheromones that, you know, you give off
mm-hmm.
when a woman smells you walking in the room, you know? We don't want to smell what your clothes smelled like last week, you know what I mean? So I just wanted to mention that. And something we were talking about, I guess, like...
Wasn't there a specific cologne, though, that you were going to talk about?
I was.
See,
thank you
I
for
remembered.
Bringing that up. Yes. Well, I think I started to say that I'm a big, big Tom Ford fan. That is
yes.
my man right there. Like... All across the board, Tom Ford has done nothing but incredible things in his life with fashion, makeup, perfume, cologne. But he has basically what is considered to be a unisex line of beautiful smelling cologne perfumes. And so I personally wear Tobacco Vanille, which is a tobacco and vanilla scent. And a lot of people have told me it smells like root beer on me, personally. Apparently smelling like root beer smells good. I would think so. And, you know, I'm a huge fan. It's not inexpensive, I will say. It is definitely an investment, a very good investment. And his whole thing is that it's unisex, and I think that's really cool.
To check that out.
Absolutely. I mean, tobacco vanilla is, I mean, tobacco veni is how he pronounces it, but... men can wear it. Women can wear it. He has an ode scent that is incredible. I don't know. Big fan of Tom Ford.
I do agree with you with what you said about scent. Mm. It reminds me of one of my ex-girlfriends who wore Egyptian musk.
There you go.
You would always know when she was around.
Right.
Like I'd come home sometimes and I could smell that Egyptian musk in the hallway and I'm like, Terry's here.
Well, absolutely. It sparks a memory. I mean, I have aunts that wear some sort of, I always ask women when I smell this on them because I don't know what it is, but it's either a Chanel scent or it's something else that's like very unusual. But when I smell it on women, I'm like stopped dead in my tracks. And that's, I mean, I had a boyfriend in high school that wore Aramis. I mean, I was a big fan of like Jacquard Noir, and I know it's like old school, but... You know, a good cologne or a good perfume goes a long way. It just really
I'm
is
not
going to
dispute that. I'm not yeah. much of a cologne wearer. I think I did go through an Old Spice phase when I was like 14, but
yeah.
I soon changed my ways and went all on
well,
natural.
Well, we're going to find you your very
oh,
own
I can't
scent,
wait.
Steve. Okay?
I want a sponsorship from a men's cologne company.
Or
if you're out there listening.
Yeah. Well, yes. Tom Ford, are you listening? Check, check. So... Let's talk about one little piece that I feel like you've mentioned to me a bunch of times on a personal level. And we've all been going through this with this whole weight loss, weight gain, COVID-19. I'm, you know, gaining the COVID-19. I'm losing the COVID-19, whatever it may be. And tell me, you mentioned last week that you gave up alcohol recently. Is that due to something?
Well, I think COVID increased my alcohol intake. Mm-hmm.
Yours and a lot of people's, huh?
I decided, because I gained extra weight that I never had before, so I decided that alcohol was one of the things I needed to take a look at, and I eliminated alcohol. It'll be a month on Thursday, and I already feel better. I feel like my face is better. It looks better. And
it does.
And I'm doing a lot of different things, actually, in the morning now. I'm drinking a lot of celery juice.
Good.
I like celery juice. It's
I'm
really
a juice.
Good. Unfortunately, it's expensive if you don't have your own juicer, especially if you go to Whole Foods, which is where I go to buy it. But I love, like, just say celery, cucumber, and lime juice together. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm actually currently just started with a nutritionist over the last couple months, and she's recommended this product called Athletic Greens.
Which you mentioned that.
Yeah, it's changed my life only in like a month and a half. I feel so much better and I have so much more energy. It's basically like 75 nutrients, minerals, and juices. Or vegetables, I should say. Sorry, vegetables.
It's powder?
It's powder. It's a powder base, and I just do look one scoop in water. I actually brought it with me today because I haven't had time to drink it yet.
Where do you get it?
I went to athleticgreens.com and got a little subscription thingy where you get it for like $77. I mean, it's worth it. It truly is worth it because I think I was malnourished. Like what she has told me is that most people in the American diet, you know, in our world today are overfed and undernourished.
Hmm.
Right?
That makes sense.
That makes you really think, right? So we all eat, but we're not getting enough vegetables, minerals, vitamins. I mean, even a multivitamin doesn't really even absorb into your system. You need the actual food. So I wanted to mention that because for me, when COVID hit and we all went inside and we were all just, you know, home, I made this like conscientious decision that, I mean, I've struggled mentally with my weight my whole life. And I think it's something that most people don't like to talk about if they do struggle with that. Mm-hmm. I've actually said to my trainers that I've had over the years, have you ever been fat? Do you even know what it feels like to struggle with weight? And
you're
you said,
but,
okay, but, you know, we are what we are in our own head.
It's
right?
hard to look in the mirror sometimes, you know?
You just said it.
Yeah.
I didn't see what you see in the mirror. I mean, that is a quintessential experience that most of us have, right? I would see it all the time in my boutique. Women would come in who were gorgeous at a size 14, and she'd see herself as like this massive, like, schlub, you know? And she'd dress herself with a, like, oversized shirt. And I'm like, we need to see your curves, lady, you know? Like, show me your curves. I mean, there's a lot of men out there that like a woman with curves, right?
There is, as a matter of fact.
I mean, let's talk about that because I think so many women, we look at these goddamn magazines that showcase the twigs in the world. Now, there's a place for the twigs too, but, and my daughter's one of them, and she's going to grow up experiencing this. Like, she's going to want something that she doesn't have, and the rest of us that are curvy look at that and go, this is what guys want, or other people.
Don't you think it's a recent trend maybe of the last 20 years where curvier women started getting more attention, which I'm happy about, by the way? It seemed like everyone was focused on skinny. Even if you look at old, like, Playboy issues and things like that, the women, it's changing.
Good.
I like it.
Good.
I like the change.
Yeah,
no one should be ashamed of their body, by the way, any kind of body size.
I agree. I mean, and yet here we are, both of us who, you know, we look at ourselves in the mirror and we see something that maybe we don't like or, you know, we do like. I feel better right now. And I will say this. I will preface this by saying I decided in September of 2019, I was going to finally take care of myself, and I was going to focus on my exercise routine because I love to exercise, and also, you know, nutrition was going to come second because I knew I couldn't do all of that at the same time. I started going to a small little gym that has, like, group workouts. Changed my life. Really, I feel so much better. And I knew going through what I've just gone through in my personal life, which was a divorce, and I was with that person for 25 years of my life.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was like, I need to feel good about myself on the flip side of this.
And I think everyone does, you know? And I agree with you on that. Mm-hmm. Plus, you can't really be judgmental towards other people and how they look. Some people feel really good in their weight, whether it's skinny or heavy or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone should feel good.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a constant struggle for a lot of people. And I think sometimes acknowledging that, for me, what I had lost was self-love. In that moment.
Gotta love yourself.
Absolutely. And I found it again, and that has been all the difference in the world. I'll still have a few extra pounds that I'd like to, you know, move around, lose, whatever, carry with me, drop off at the airport, you know, whatever.
And you know, the only reason I brought this up with you is because I've always been kind of on the thin
right,
side, and then all of a sudden in the last year, it just imploded a little bit, mm-hmm. like maybe extra 15, 20 pounds came out of, you know, wine and I started eating foods that I didn't eat a lot of because when you're alone a lot, and I was alone during COVID, mm-hmm. I was just trying to get through the days, you know,
right.
without losing my mind, you know?
Right, absolutely. I'm an emotional eater. That's if I'm not feeling good about myself, I like the crunch, that salty crunch. Mm-hmm.
Seems like there's a whole show on eating, if you think about it. It's like
for sure. Speaking of eating... Let's talk about this burger I had on Friday
Uh-oh.
Night. Holy moly. I know you don't eat meat, Steve, but let me tell you, I'm going to talk to my meat lovers out there. So a good friend of mine who I actually met at Rebirth Transformation Center, which is the place I work out, a little plug for them, in Wakefield. A good friend of mine that I started working out with and we jived in the gym, if you will. She helped to open up Capital Grill's new burger bar.
Newberry Street.
On Newberry Street.
In Boston.
It is called the Capital Burger.
Wow.
And it is right on Newberry Street, right in the, you know, hub of it all. And I walked over there from my gallery on Friday afternoon. And
it's a pretty long walk, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it was a mile and mile and a half.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it wasn't bad. It was awesome to walk through the South End. And
I love walking in Boston.
It was almost as good as
walking in New York. You know, those are the two best places to walk.
I used to walk home from Midtown Manhattan over the Brooklyn Bridge. I had much fun walking home from work. That was a good time. But so I walk over there, and I will say it sure felt like life is starting to open up because there were so many people out and about, like mobs.
This is that really warm day you're talking about.
Well, this was Friday, and it was beautiful. And then Saturday was even more beautiful.
Saturday, yeah,
but it was
warmer.
I mean, how like so many people out and about, and the restaurant was jammed. The restaurant was jammed. I saw them turning people away constantly throughout the evening. But we'll talk about some of the beautiful people that we saw out and about this weekend. But I wanted
to mention
the burger. Yes. Okay. So I had the roasted mushroom, and it comes with Swiss cheese. I asked them to give me cheddar cheese on it. We did caramelized onions. Now, I am gluten-free, too, and they have an incredible gluten-free bun, which most restaurants do not have, okay? They either don't have it. I mean, things are starting to evolve now. People generally will have a gluten-free option now for bread. But to, you know, I'm sorry, but if you're going to eat a juicy, tender burger, you want a bun. You know, you want to pick up the burger with the bun. There's nothing. I'm sorry. Don't give me lettuce. Exactly. Two-handed burger. And so their burger is like, I should have double-checked this beforehand, but it's like three different types of meat. It's like brisket, and a couple other thing parts of the cow. And it was, and my girlfriend got hers well done, which I know to the world of chefs and meat people, that's, you know, a sacrilege. But I got mine like medium and medium to plus because sometimes I don't want to have, I would have eaten this thing like medium rare because it was just so tender and juicy. They have, they apparently the space used to be Paparazzi and before that it was a French restaurant. It's got like a kitchen the size of this room. Apparently it's a very small kitchen.
I don't know how big this room is, so I can't really tell.
Let's
our
call
listeners
it that. Like 4x6. But I mean, apparently the restaurant's kitchen is teeny tiny and they use a press for their burgers. So they actually don't need to have a big old open grill. They don't even grill the burgers. And let me tell you, this thing was cooked to perfection. Now, they have a few things to work out. They've only been open about a week and a half. We had some slow service. I had a wonderful, I'll give my shout out to my waitress. But in general, get down to the Capital Burger in Boston. I highly recommend, you can create your own burger too.
I'm going to guess, because it's Newbury Street in Boston, that the burger was between $12 and
$15. $16.
Newbury Street.
But it's Capital Grille. Yeah. I mean, let's talk, like, one of the best steakhouses around. And to me, to get a burger for $16, I thought that was pretty good. I mean, and not just your average burger.
Do they
like a
have
really good one.
Plant-based?
Yes.
They do?
They do. They have a vegetarian option.
Okay, maybe I will check it out.
Yeah, and I'd be interested to see.
Plant-based.
Yeah, I'd be interested to
see.
That's
$17 probably.
Right. You add the gluten-free bun. They always jack up the price for that, you know. Oh, you need almond milk? Here, $2 extra. Oh, you need a gluten-free bun? $2 extra.
It's Boston.
Yeah, well, it's probably everywhere. But, yeah, let's get down there, and you will experience the vegetarian option at the Capital Burger, and I will go back and get that exact same burger.
I'm down
because
for
it
that.
Was amazing.
As long as they have French fries, I'm down.
Yes. Oh,
they
yes.
Must.
We did. We got Parmesan truffle French fries.
You don't mess around when you go out to eat. That's
oh, no.
why you wanted the food segment on this show.
Yes,
I know.
Can I
go all the way back for a second to
yes,
Wakefield?
Please. Oh, please. Yeah.
Because you were talking about food. Mm-hmm. I was actually living in Wakefield when I moved back here from New York City around 96. And Wakefield has a couple of really good places to eat. That place, Brothers, it's fantastic.
Right on Main Street.
It's run by Greeks. Greeks
yep.
know how to cook.
Oh,
and
they
then
do.
There's an Asian restaurant across the street, and they have the sushi burrito, which I love.
Okay, we'll have to touch base on those guys. Mm-hmm. I've been going to Brothers. They have one in Danvers Center. And I take my dad there, and he loves the lamb there, and he also loves an omelet there. And I love the spinach pie.
Oh, yeah, they're famous for that.
Oh, we're going to talk about Greek food
at
one of these days because there's lots of Greek locations we can touch on. So you were mentioning that you were out and about on Saturday and you noticed lots of sassy dressed ladies out there, huh?
This is what I noticed. I think we're headed for the Summer of Love part two because people have been so cooped up that I swear to you, I was driving around Cambridge and Somerville and I saw some of the scantily dressed women I've seen in a long time. No bras, the shortest shorts ever. It was everywhere I went. I was almost driving off the road. I mean, for people in other parts of the country besides the northern parts, they don't understand that when April and May hits in New England, everyone's like, let's take our clothes off and go out. And now, because of COVID and there really wasn't a summer last year, we can only imagine. I'd like to turn the clock back and be like, you know,
summer
25.
Summer 69. Huh?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I did notice that. It was
summer
really
of 69. No bras and a bunch of shorty shorts.
Yes.
Huh?
They had those like short track shorts. I saw a lot of those on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it started when I went to Diesel Cafe to get my iced tea like I do whenever I'm in Somerville. And there was 10 girls standing out front and they were wearing Tufts basketball shirts. And I'm like, these are all like the Tufts basketball team. And they all had the same outfits on, like the track shorts and
those,
the braless
really
tops.
Tiny
and I'm
shorts.
I love Somerville.
Well, you know, I agree with you. I think we didn't have
a summer,
a spring and summer that we were, I mean, I was in my house from like March until at least the end of June. Just in my own yard, you know, waving to my neighbors as they walked through our cul-de-sac.
It was a rough year.
It was weird, you know? So I get it. Like, I felt that same vibe, especially Friday night walking over there. I felt like even though everybody in the city truly does adhere to the wearing a mask while they walk the streets.
Everyone was wearing a mask everywhere I went, unlike where I live out in the suburbs where they don't give a shit about anything.
Right.
They just don't. It's a different world out there than Somerville. Well, I think you'll get beat up if you don't have a mask
on. I mean, I think the city, I mean, I sometimes pull my mask down a little bit so I can breathe as I'm walking. And you don't see people doing that. Everybody's got their fashionable masks on and, you know, we're gonna see like people matching their masks with their like shorts or something.
You know, Mike Nash, who engineers our show, built this studio, Voice Motel. He's got we have plexiglass in front of us
right now. Oh yeah,
we're not just sitting here talking nose to nose. We have a barrier around
us.
We're
6 feet.
We're doing it right.
We're 6 feet apart. So, would you say that? You noticed all these, you know, hot mamas out there. I would say
they were all of age, by the way.
Oh, were they? Uh-huh.
I'm sure they were.
I was just
going
to say, are you being an old man?
I was just looking.
Gawking.
I'm just admiring the scenery. I didn't really think I was doing. I don't feel guilty about it.
No, I love when this kind of thing happens. When
there were some hot guys too, if you want to really get technical.
Yeah, I would say.
And
so.
They weren't wearing shirts, so you know, for the women, it's even better. You know, you get to see this athletic young 26-year-old guy with no shirt on.
I will say, I am not ashamed to say that if a guy runs by me, you know, with his shirt off and he's got a nice body, I am definitely going to take a double take.
We better be careful. We're going to go from PG-13 to another rating really quickly here.
So you had me do my homework this weekend and this past week, which was we are covering one of our classic favorites, Almost Famous.
Yeah.
Featuring.
Well, it's hard to believe, first of all, that film came out 21 years
ago.
Was
it really? 21?
21 years
ago. How is that possible?
Well, you know, it's Cameron Crowe who did all these other great films before it, like Say Anything. Jerry Maguire, I guess, was pretty good. He actually wrote the script for Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Mm. And to do it, because he looked really young for his age, he went and spent time in a high school when he was 21. And he used all personal stories. I know we're going to talk about Almost Famous, but that's when he started. That was the first thing he did.
So tell the audience who Cameron Crowe was, just for the average listener.
Well, he grew up pretty unusual because it's actually, when you watch Almost Famous, it's his bio.
That him?
Yes, that's him
he's
writing about. When he was young, he skipped a few grades and he had to go to high school when he was a lot younger than other kids. And he wanted to be a music writer. So he started writing for a couple local papers, and then he met Lester Bangs from Cream Magazine. And that escalated to the point where he was on tour. He was going to go on tour checking out some bands, and he ran into the band Stillwater. And when he met them, he loved them because they had this group of Band-Aids, like groupies, what they call themselves, Band-Aids, that started following him. He's only like 15 at the time, mind you. And Ben Fontoris, who was the editor of Rolling Stone, read some of his stuff and liked it. So he said, why don't you do a story on Stillwater? Go on the road for them. Don't let them pay for anything. So he goes on the road for Stillwater. In real life, it was the Allman Brothers band that he went out with. He also spent time with Zeppelin on the road. So he knew about the 16-year-old girls that were coming to all the shows and hanging out with the bands. That's
I didn't
Almost
know
Famous
exactly what who Stillwater was supposed
They're
to be.
A fictional band.
And then who? Okay, so that was the Allman Brothers.
Here's the story. He interviewed Greg Allman, and Greg Allman didn't like what he said. He felt he was being, quote, too honest, just like Stillwater said, and he wouldn't let Rolling Stone release the story. And then finally, a few weeks later, Greg Allman, after peer pressure, he said, okay, to Rolling Stone, you can put it out. And then Cameron Crowe, the writer, was born.
Wow.
And he ended up doing a lot of cover stories. I have a copy of Rolling Stone. It's worth a lot of money. Cameron Crowe's cover story on Led Zeppelin. They purposely gave him all the bands that they didn't like. The guys at Rolling Stone didn't like Led Zeppelin. They were known for bashing Led Zeppelin. Cream, too. I don't know. You have to ask Jan Wenner and Ben Fontoris that question.
I love Philip Seymour Hoffman, first of all.
He plays Lester Bangs.
I love that character. I love his setup with the, you know, his albums and his what he's wearing. And, I mean, first of all, like, R.I.P. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah,
because
great actor.
What a, you know, loss for us in the world of film. But, I really enjoyed their dialogue. I really enjoyed that relationship. You know, I think to me that was one of the best relationships of the whole movie is this mentor, you know, that Cameron gets. And, you know, I guess I never, shame on me, but I guess I didn't really know that Almost Famous was a true story. Like, I thought it was just a great
It's true script. About the path, but it's fictional too. Because
did Penny Lane exist?
There must have been a Penny Lane. I don't know if that was her name, but the one interesting thing about it is he had two real rock stars around him: his wife Nancy Wilson, now ex-wife from Heart, and Peter Frampton was the musical consultant. Peter Frampton actually has two cameos in the film. He plays Humble Pie's tour manager, which is funny because he was in Humble Pie.
Oh, so he's playing poker with them in that
scene?
Yeah,
that scene, and okay. I was going to bring this up.
Yeah, that scene.
Something I want to bring up about the film is I love the opening sequence when they show all the ticket stubs, hotel pens, keys, backstage passes, and then the hotels that get mentioned in the film. The one where the poker place was going on is the Elliott Hotel in Boston.
Uh-huh.
They also talk about the Rock and Roll Hyatt Hotel. You want to hear something crazy? I've stayed in all four of these hotels. The Rock and Roll Hyatt on Sunset, Elliott Hotel in Boston, Slingo's in Cleveland, and my favorite, the Gramercy Park Hotel in New York, with a big scene at the end.
Where she's Quaalude overdose.
Mm-hmm. She's actually in a different hotel, but the band staying at the Gramercy Park Hotel.
I see.
And she's at the high.
Yeah.
She was warned not to go to New York because Russell's wife, Russell Hammond, the guitar player in the film, Billy Crudup, he was great.
Gorgeous.
His wife in the film actually showing up. And they tell Penny Lane, you have to stay away. You can't come. But, of course, she doesn't.
I said to this when we walked in today, you know, Almost Famous, for me, when I first saw it and then to see it again, it's the music, it's the mother-father, I mean, I'm sorry, the mother-son relationship.
Sister, too.
And the sister. Yeah. But that, like, she just loves her kids so much and she's pushing them away, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I know women who do that to their kids and I've seen it. And, you know, it's like, so painful now that I'm a mother to, like, see that, you know? But you feel her love so strong, and the relationship he has with his mother, it does seem really quite beautiful.
When he won the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay, he thanked his mother and his sister first.
Aww.
Because he said this was about our family and how they grew up. There was no father, but they grew up like that. And San Diego. He ended up living in San Diego a lot. They shot a bunch of the film in San Diego, the beginning scenes when he was in school.
Love San Diego. It's my favorite place. Mm-hmm.
The one scene that I have to mention involving the sister is when the sister says, screw this, and she bolts. Mm. But she tells him, I left you a gift under your bed. And he goes under his bed, and all the albums are there. And Tommy, Tommy by The Who, she left a note. And the note was, light a candle and you'll see your future.
Yeah.
And the kid, when the record's spinning, I'll tell you, I've cried more times watching that film every time. Because, you know, It reminds me of myself. I grew up as a writer.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a writer, and then I wanted to be in the music business.
Right.
And that's, I went
you
in a different path.
You identified with him. Mm-hmm.
Oh, totally. Mm-hmm. Totally.
And it's so funny, because I identified with Kate Hudson's character. You know, it's like your desperate search for love your whole life. You know, you want the guys to love you. You're like, I was always into music. I dated a guy that was like a rocker, you know, guitar, that mystique guitarist. I totally get that, you know, obsession with the guitarist, because we've talked about, oh, let's see, we've talked about Luther Dickinson. We've talked about, you know, Derek Trex.
Gary Clark Jr.
Gary Clark Jr., of course. I mean, Prince. Oh, God, we will do a whole episode on Prince and my love of Prince. But, you know, I felt sad about watching her because toward, you know, she tries to show this tough exterior, like she's a badass and she's the Band-Aid and she's just there to inspire the musicians and give the blowjobs or whatever it is that they do. But, you know, you see that she just desperately wants him to love her. And that's that scene when you just spoke of, when they're in New York City and she's not supposed to go and she gets told to leave.
Yeah, they really loved guys in the bands. Firouza Balk, I thought, was amazing. Mm. Sapphire.
Yes.
There's the one scene
love her.
Where she's making fun of the new groupies, the new Band-Aids that come in, and she yes. goes, they don't know what it's like when you love a band so much that you just, you love the music.
It's just so all about good. Loving the music.
Yeah,
and
she's
that's
so good in that film. And I loved every scene that she was in. Like when she opens the backstage door and she does the Zeppelin thing, you know, it's like, you know.
Conversation she has with his mother when she picks up in the hotel room, you know, she's like, your son, you know, don't worry about him. Meanwhile, it's like, who's bringing in the pot and who's doing this? And I don't know. I agree. Like there's so many pieces to the movie. What else, what did you think of? So you and I talked about the music, and that was going to be a big thing that you showcased today. What's your favorite song in the whole?
Well, before I say that, I'm going to use a line for the song because I couldn't remember, but I have it in my computer here. She opens door and yells out, does anybody remember laughter? You know, it's a line from The Song Remains the Same. Robert Plant says that. Mm-hmm. You have to say that the best music scene is definitely Tiny Dancer.
Oh,
when they're on the bus after Russell does his, I'm a golden god, and jumps off the roof, and they rescue him, and then that song comes on, and they all start singing along.
Well, and everybody's pissed off at each other, and the song
brought
them together.
Elton John did a fine thing letting them. You know, Cameron Crowe had to go to England to talk to Led Zeppelin about using their music in the film. And he gave them four songs. Tangerine was the song at the end, because they were at that time would not give anyone any of their songs. But Cameron Crowe, because he was able to get a Led Zeppelin song in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, the scene where the guy's on the date and he goes, the first thing you do is you put Led Zeppelin side two on, Led Zeppelin four side two. And so he already had a relationship. So he went there and he convinced them, and they gave him four songs for the movie. So I'd say Tiny Dancer, Tangerine. There's one scene, the Golden God scene, where Deep Purple Burn is in that scene.
Love
before
it.
That. And I'm scrolling down here. Those are the most prevalent ones.
Well, I will say that I don't think I knew the song Tiny Dancer until that movie.
Really?
I mean, I remember really being touched so much by that song. And I've actually tried to learn it, to sing it, with my previous life. And, you know, it's not an easy song to sing, actually. It's not an easy song to get, because and even when I've played it, when I've been around my ex and some of his musician friends, like, they've told me about some of the octaves, like, as Elton has written it, you know, when you're playing the guitar. But I sing it at, you know, volume 11 when I'm by myself in my car, of course. But it is such an incredible scene.
There's a lot of great scenes in that film. But you got to think that that's the best one. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're in a tour bus, and It was before they got the plane. And right. then it went downhill after that. Oh, I got to mention two great guest appearances in the film, because I didn't even realize the first time that I watched the film when they brought in the new manager. And I didn't know that, where did I put that in
Jimmy
here?
Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon plays Dennis Hope, their new manager. And the other one that you might not have noticed, you remember when he gets shocked in Tempe, mm-hmm. Arizona,
yeah.
and the promoter's chasing the bus? It's yeah. Marc Maron.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay.
It took me a couple times to figure that out. Same thing with Jimmy why can't I remember
Jimmy
his last
Fallon.
Name? Fallon.
Yeah. Oh, I love Jimmy Fallon.
Did you
Fallon.
Know
Huge
that
fan.
Was him right away? Because
oh,
I
yeah.
didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Just, I mean, when I watched last night, yes. I didn't remember that he was in it, you know, from when I first saw it. But so there's that one scene when they're walking into the hotel and there's just people everywhere and it's like music madness.
The Rock and Roll Hyatt on Sunset.
Is that what that was?
Yes.
And there's a guy like dressed like Bowie, and then there's like yep. Bowie's going into the.
That's Cleveland. There's this in one Alice Cooper or supposedly there in Cleveland, David Bowie. They show him going in the elevator.
Yeah, right. That's yeah. the scene. And then is that the scene where they're going upstairs and they're walking by all the rooms where people are, you know, jamming out. And then there's that scene where a guy and a girl are playing.
I'm so happy you brought that up because you're not going to believe
Who
what I'm going to tell you.
I
signed Elaine Summers, who's the girl, to a publishing deal at Third Stone Music. Pete Droge is her husband. They're still together. That was them.
That was
them. Because they live up in Seattle. And, you know, Cameron Crowe and Nancy Wilson, they've all, like Singles, the movie Singles
yes,
he worked
love
on,
that. Mm-hmm.
They love that Seattle music scene, and they're always bringing people in. So.
It's so funny, because literally when I watched that, I was like, is that like supposed to be Neil Young or something? Because I couldn't tell who it was, but
I knew them, but most people didn't know who it was, that it was Pete Droge, who was kind of a Tom Petty.
Okay.
Kind of
I was going to say, what does he sing?
You know the movie Beautiful Girls with Matt Dillon? It's based
yeah.
in Minnesota.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The theme song is Pete Droge's Beautiful Girls.
That's Beautiful Girls.
I can't believe I remember one of his songs. Thank you if you listen out there, Pete.
Good job, Steve.
Elaine and I
you get
are really,
paid today.
Elaine and I are still in touch with each other, and that's her
that's
singing
so
with him.
Cool.
When he stops, and then they have to drag him away. I love that. When the kid's walking down the hall.
Right. And then that kid that, like, is obsessed with Led Zeppelin. Is that, like, kind of an ode to Led Zeppelin
oh,
through
absolutely.
The whole thing?
There's a
I
lot
see.
Of secret little
oh,
mess. Cameron Crowe's
all making
a
sense.
Genius. The one other scene I totally forgot that I loved is when the bus stops at a rest stop and they leave without the singer.
Yeah.
And he's running down the road. I'm only the lead singer.
Yeah. Yes. But so is that, did that really happen with the Allman Brothers, that kind of relationship where...
The part about not releasing the tape did happen because Greg Allman...
But I think most bands would have that issue where the lead guy wants to be the lead guy and the, you know, the front of every album and that sort of thing. And the rest of them are kind of behind
the
scenes. Like
that
to me was one of the biggest themes that stuck out was that they had this constant, you know, oil and water feeling between the two of those characters, you know.
Yeah, it was a volatile relationship.
The lead singer versus the sexy guitarist.
Jeff Beebe and Russell Hammond.
Yeah.
Had a volatile because it used to be the Jeff Beebe band.
It was.
And then they became Stillwater. And then the T-shirt scene, when he's in focus and the other two guys are out of focus.
I mean, that's like, a big thing to happen to a band.
Your looks are becoming a problem.
Right.
I can quote so many
But
things
so funny to me, because I think that Jeff Beebe and the character that played him, the actor that played him, is handsome. He's very handsome.
He is.
There's nothing not handsome about him.
They weren't an ugly band. They weren't an ugly band. They were a good-looking band, I thought. But, you know, I mean, it's like a fiction. I mean, Cameron Crowe pulled everything out of his bag. Because if you look at his history of bands, I mean films. Okay, we got Fast Times, you got Jerry Maguire, you got Singles, and you got Almost Famous. Those are probably his, wouldn't you say Almost Famous is the best one?
I certainly loved Singles out of that mix and Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I mean,
they're all
to
great.
Me, they're all great. They're classics.
Most people would say Jerry Maguire,
you know,
because Tom Cruise.
No. But I mean, Cuba Gooding Jr. is the best part of that movie.
Didn't he win the
Show
best
me
supporting...
the money!
Show me the money, right?
I mean, that's the best part of that movie. and you had me at hello. I mean, those are the two quotes that we all walk away with.
You had me at hello. Yes.
Ah, someday. Yeah.
It was one, you know, I've seen the film so many times. I mean, I'm so geeked out right now. I put 25 different notes about the film, and I only think I talked about 15 of them, because every scene, and there's the director's cut.
Mm. I'm interested to see that.
It's called
next.
Untitled. Yeah. You gotta see that.
I gotta
it's
see
an
it.
Extra 30 minutes.
Wow.
And there's extended conversations between with Lester Bangs, who's my favorite music writer ever, by the way, from Cream Magazine. When I was a kid, Cream was my magazine.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because I noticed that, and I'm a big, big Eric Clapton fan, and I'm a big Cream fan of Eric Clapton. But so
I don't think
there's no connection there, right?
I don't think so.
So why would a music magazine be called Cream?
Wow, you're really hitting me with that question. I don't have an answer for that one. The thing that I loved about Cream Magazine is, you know where they were based? Detroit.
I noticed that Detroit Sucks t-shirt
yeah,
that he's
wearing.
Yeah,
that was a joke, because Lester Bangs actually moved from California to Detroit to live there. But when he worked for Rolling Stone, he didn't live in New York.
So he worked for Rolling Stone.
Yeah,
so
they were in San Francisco, and they moved to New York, and he wouldn't move to New York.
He stayed
in California, but he also died really young. He OD'd.
Did he?
Yeah, which is sad.
Bummer.
Because I love reading his reviews that he wrote. He was unmerciful, like he says in the film. His reviews were like there's one scene where he's talking about how much he doesn't like Jethro Tull and the Doors, but he loves the Guess Who, because they're brutally honest and they're drunken buffoons. And then he puts Iggy Pop on, you know?
But isn't he, like, also basically telling the main, you know, the main character, like, all the bad things about the writing industry?
Yeah, don't become
and
friends
don't
with
do
the
it
rock stars.
And, yeah, don't go. He was, like, trying to basically tell him, don't, like, go write for Rolling Stones. So for you to tell me that he wrote for the Rolling Stones prior to that is interesting.
Well, it was after Lester Bangs. He called Lester Bangs up to ask him for advice.
And all the quotes he gives him are fabulous. Love the whole.
It's a think piece
think
about
piece.
A Midwestern band.
Yeah.
You know, Lester Bangs is, God, if you can't tell, I get all emotional when I think about him.
I need to know more about him. Yeah.
He's brilliant.
Okay. One thing that when I was actually searching yesterday for, or 2 days ago for Almost Famous and how I was going to watch it, I came across Studio 54. So we are going to have to cover Studio 54 next time. Okay. And so we'll talk about that, because I'm like totally obsessed with that all of a sudden, because it's all about launching a business and having it be successful right off the bat.
I know your dad, Jean Sariano, who's the feature artist right now at your gallery. You should plug your gallery every show, actually.
Okay, Cibellini Art Gallery. We'd love to have you come down, please. It's in SOA, 460C, Harrison Avenue.
And on your way there, listen to the Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico podcast.
Exactly. Let's do some shameless plugs here.
I know your father hung around with Andy Warhol and all those guys. Did he ever go to Studio 54?
I've got to ask. I meant to ask my mom and my dad. I'll be seeing my dad on Wednesday to take him to the dentist, and I'll ask my mom today. But
I'm betting he did.
But let's talk about the fact that that was 1977. I was 3 years old. So, yes, we lived right down the street, but I was 3 years old. So were they going to Studio 54 and, you know, raving their faces off, basically?
Raving their faces off. It's funny, because it really wasn't called the rave then, but that's
exactly
but
that's
what
it is. Yeah.
That's a really good point you brought up. I went into Studio 54. It became another club, and I can't remember what, and I actually was in that room once.
One time
when I lived
it's
in New
York. It's
still
there. I mean, I've driven by
it's
it
something
a
else
dozen
now.
Times.
I don't know what it is.
More than
theater
a dozen
or something.
Times. Yeah, I mean, well, we'll cover that. I'll be super excited to go there. But so tell us, you've got your the music piece that we're going to kind of close on today. Who are we talking about today?
You know, Arcade Fire, you know, I knew about them for a few years before I started listening to them. But in 2004, when I heard the Suburbs album, They're a Canadian band. It's funny because they played at TT the Bears a few times, mm-hmm. and they actually have live songs that were recorded at TT the Bears. This is before they became huge. When the Suburbs exploded, they ended up winning a Grammy for that. It was that, and then David Bowie. I know you want me to bring this up.
Yes, please.
They played in New York City the first time. David Bowie and David Byrne from the Talking Heads both showed up, and they both fell in love with the band.
So David Bowie and David Byrne are in the audience, yes. and they're watching Arcade yes. Fire, who is one of the best-dressed bands out there, by the way.
You have to bring that up.
Of course I do.
They were great. Instrumentally, that band is phenomenal.
They are. I mean, you said to me the other day that you think that is it Suburbs is one of the best albums?
I think I might have said Arcade Fire is one of the best albums in the last 20 years, and I'll stick to that.
Okay.
I will stick to that.
The best album or the best band?
Well, The Suburbs, I think, is one of the best albums, but I think
that's a
the
big
band.
Statement.
What let me finish that other story first, because I know.
Oh, yeah.
So those guys both saw him, right? And then the next time, David Byrne jammed with them, and Bowie came back, and then he saw him. He said, I want to play with you guys.
That's like a dream come true.
In 2005, when they did Fashion Rocks, right up your alley, uh-huh. Bowie and Arcade Fire performed together on stage in front of all these fashion moguls. It was a benefit.
I mean, that's like Eddie Vedder saying that when he played with, who's the dude that was his icon, like his, the guy from The Who, the lead singer of The Who.
Roger Daltrey, Pete Townsend. Yeah.
When he plays, he gets him up on stage, because I've seen Pearl Jam now a handful of times, and that's an experience, and we'll talk about Pearl Jam as well on this podcast.
Oh, I got some good stuff on Pearl Jam, because I met Stone and Jeff before Pearl Jam. I worked with Mother Love Bone, so we should talk about that, definitely.
I understand the obsession that people have with Eddie Vedder now that I've seen him play live. But anyway, I mean, I can't imagine being on stage, being a musician, and David Bowie jumping in or wanting to play with me. I mean, that's a huge kudos to Arcade Fire.
It's funny. I love The Who and Pete Townsend, but to me, you know, when you look at the Beatles and the Stones, right there below them is Queen and Bowie. You know, it's like that's the hierarchy, you know. You could talk about Hendrix and Dylan and all them, but as far as rock goes, yeah, I mean, Bowie.
Who were the first two that you said? The
Beatles
Rolling
and the Stones.
The Rolling Stones and the Beatles. Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, not everyone always agrees on that.
I know people who wouldn't agree with you on that.
Probably. I know people that don't like the Beatles. I don't understand
understand that. But I know I have some friends who I consider my music friends that don't love the Stones. And it's kind of surprising to me because I think Beast of Burden and, oh man, there's so
you
many Honky Tonk Woman and
songs by
right.
Them.
I know, and the Beatles. Forget it. We can't even. That's like rock gods. But I mean, I would say, I really appreciated watching Queen, and we will talk about that movie too on here. But I know you're a huge Freddie Mercury fan.
I saw Queen three times when I was a teenager in the 70s.
Wow.
Yes,
that
I'm
must
old.
Be amazing. No, I mean that's like an epic moment. I mean that's what I feel like. I got to see Prince. I paid big money to go see Prince, and I had great seats. And you know what? That's a once in a lifetime opportunity for me because he is my favorite musician. But I mean to be able to say you saw Freddie Mercury and Queen.
I know
that's big. That's a big deal. But let's talk about Arcade Fire. And have you seen them live?
I was gonna wrap it up with that. You're very good. Your ESP is good. When the Everything Now album came out, this cemented it for me. I got to see them at the A&E Arena in Pittsburgh, and they completely crushed it from start to finish. They first of all walked. There was a 6,000 venue. It was a small venue, but Pittsburgh is a small city. You know, compared to Boston and New York and Philly and L.A., all of them. Pittsburgh's not a big city.
Right.
And they walked through the crowd to get to the stage. It was an outdoor venue.
I love it when bands
And
do
when that.
That
happened, I was like, okay, this is already really cool. And then they just blew me away.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I was like, this band's one of the best bands. What I loved about them is in the first four songs, four different people played bass. They were all switching drums, bass, keyboards, guitar. They're a really, really talented band. It's not typically my style, Although, you know, when
I know,
you think about it.
I was
kind
of surprised when you said that to me about
that. I know
them.
A lot of people are when I tell them that, but they are heavily influenced by Bowie. And I just basically said Bowie's at my top four of all time.
That
you know?
I get.
So, I mean, yeah, Arcade Fire, I can't wait for their next record.
Awesome. I thought I had seen them live at the House of Blues, and I'm pretty sure I now got that confused with Kings of Leon. Could that be true?
It could be.
I'm like embarrassed to say that. But then I'm like, no, I saw Arcade Fire.
You saw a lot of people, though. One thing I know about you is you've been to a lot of shows.
I have.
I used
it's
to go
really
to shows every
to
night.
Me.
But for someone that wasn't in the industry like you, you've blown my mind with how many bands you've told me you've seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw Gary Clark Jr. three times or something. I'm like, what?
Who's in just seen the Gary last, Clark? Like, 5 years.
That's impressive right
I
there.
I would have seen him a lot more if I had known there were shows that I stalk his tour page just so I can...
I can't wait till you're a stylist.
Oh, God. Well, that would be my dream come true. All right. Well, I mean, I love what we covered today. I'm really excited to be part of this podcast with you. And, you know, music and, I mean, as you can see, music is a big piece of my life. I know it's a big piece of your life.
Absolutely.
But, you know, music inspires art. It inspires creativity. It inspires food, films,
fashion.
I mean, it all is.
I mean, look at Bowie.
Intertwined.
You know, we were talking about him. He's one of the most fashionable people in the was. R.I.P. Was one of the most fashionable people in the world. And what
was
he?
His wife.
A rock star. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He married a model.
I mean, and he was bisexual.
Yes.
So.
There's a couple books out that I would highly, I don't know the author's names, but I've read a couple books where they go into detail. He didn't have any, it didn't matter if it was a man or a woman, whoever it was, if he had a thing, he slept with them. Basically, he slept with a lot of people. It's all in the book.
That's why we're going to cover Studio 54, because I feel like that's such a piece of that whole scene in New York City was like men, women, you know, heterosexual, homosexual, music lovers, models, foodies. They're all coming together and going to Studio 54. So we'll wrap it up with that, and we will talk about Studio 54 and that whole music, fashion, like, food. Because one of the two guys that opened up Studio 54 was working promoting restaurants, and his buddy was the lawyer, and they went to Syracuse University, by the way.
Oh, I knew Syracuse would come up.
Throw it in there.
You want me to give the email out?
Yes, please.
Yeah, it's I'll try to get it right this time. It seems to me, seamstomecssr@gmail.com. You think they got it?
I would say that was pretty clear.
I'll do it again. Seams, seamstomecssr@gmail.com.
So thank you once again for joining us. Steve Ricardo, Sibylline Sariano, signing off with Seems to Me, the greatest loves in life, food, film, fashion, and music.